Good afternoon. It's 4 p.m. on a Thursday, a very snowy, beautiful Thursday here in the Roaring Fork Valley. You're tuned to Katie and Kay, and this is Raleigh Burley with Everything Under the Sun, your Soper Sun Radio half hour once a week. And I would be scolded by my board if I did not mention that we have a fundraiser tonight, the Cabin Fever Wine Tasting 16th Birthday Celebration at the Thompson Barn from 8 to p.m. Sorry, 5 to 8 p.m. But that's not the topic of today's conversation. There's another event happening in the valley tonight, being presented by the Roaring Fork Kayak Club and American Whitewater, a river film fest. And we're going to hear all about that. We have four special guests in the studio today. A familiar voice to you all, Greg Albrecht here.
Yeah, and thank you for having us on, Raleigh. And hi, dear Katie and Kay listeners and Soper Sun fans. We really appreciate this. I am doing some executive director work for the Roaring Fork Kayaking Club right now. And yes, we are co-hosting with American Whitewater, and it is for the benefit of the final production of a movie from Rig to Flip called Common Waters. American Whitewater's, part of American Whitewater's mission is to secure fair and legal access to rivers. And we are really excited to be in support of this event and of this movie and of Hattie, who I've witnessed do incredible work in her role with American Whitewater in terms of community organization and advocacy. So Roaring Fork Kayaking Club's been around since 2021. Grassroots started at a kitchen table by Scott and Vita Dillard, Matthew Dumoulin, and several others. They've done an incredible job, and we're working towards growth and elevating our mission, and we're really excited for this opportunity to help in this.
Well, thank you very much, Greg. Thanks for being here representing the Roaring Fork Kayak Club. Feel free to chime in throughout our interview today. We also have Hattie Johnson representing American Whitewater. How are you doing, Hattie?
Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Great to be here.
Anything you'd like to say about American Whitewater to set the stage?
Sure. So I am the Southern Rockies Restoration Director for American Whitewater. I live here in Carbondale and excited to be back in the studio here at Katie and Kay. We are a national river conservation organization. We work protecting and restoring rivers. And really key to all that work is ensuring that the public has access to those rivers. We come from a philosophy that you protect and care about those places that you know the best. And so having the public to be able to see the public resources of our rivers is really key. And so I'm excited to get more into that conversation and kind of what the state of play is here in Colorado, because I think it's a topic many don't know the details of, and we're going to have a really great opportunity today to get into that.
Great. And also here in the studio, we have Don Holstrom. How are you, Don?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm the state co-chair of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, and happy to be here. And also, we're part of a broader coalition with groups like American Whitewater and others supporting expanding stream access in Colorado. Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is an organization that of people who hunt and fish and are conservationists who are fighting for clean air, clean water, quality habitat for wildlife. And stream access and other types of access is very important to us. And I think in Colorado, as there's been more pressure on resources, it's become more important that there's not only additional access, but it also provides opportunities for those who may have been historically challenged to get access to the outdoors. And mm-hmm. So the fact that there are these pressures makes access issues even more important.
All right. Well, and our fourth guest, last but not least, Mark Squillaci, who is a law professor. Yeah, how are you?
Very well, thanks. Good to be here. Thanks for having me. I should mention before I forget that Don mentioned this coalition that we have that is this coalition that is focused on stream access kinds of issues, and it is called the Colorado Stream Access Coalition. We have a website. It's new. It's just being populated, but if you Google that, I think you'll find some information about our organization, and we're looking forward to getting in touch with lots of folks to join us in this effort that we're making. Just a couple things about myself. So I've been teaching water resources law for many years. I'm a river user myself, and was very interested in why Colorado has some of the least progressive stream access rules in the country. Mm-hmm. And been interested in this issue for many years. I've had my students engage with trying to help secure public access to our streams. I represented a client, Roger Hill, who's featured in the movie that we talked about, trying to help him get stream access. We were ultimately denied standing by the Colorado Supreme Court. It's very frustrating that the Colorado Supreme Court has been so hostile to stream access issues. We can talk a little bit later about the sort of infamous People versus Emmert decision, which denies public access even to float on our Colorado streams. And so great to be here. I'm looking forward to sort of having this conversation and engaging with folks who might be interested in this issue.
Well, I think that's actually a perfect place to jump off because in preparing for this, Greg shared some materials with me, and I didn't know that Colorado is a little bit unique in the West with the way the laws work and more restrictive for access than our neighboring states like New Mexico, for example.
Very much less open to access than New Mexico, or really any of our other neighboring states to the West. I mean, most states do recognize the right for the public to gain access. I mentioned this decision, People versus Emmert, and it's probably worth talking about for a few minutes right now. So our Colorado Constitution, which was enacted in 1876, quite specifically provides that the waters of every natural stream in the state of Colorado are hereby declared to be the property of the public and dedicated to the use of the people. And yet, despite that language, the Colorado Supreme Court held in this 1979 decision that it does not guarantee or give the public the right to use streams through private property. So even though the water of the streams is supposedly the property of the public, is supposedly dedicated to our use, a majority of the Supreme Court held that the public has no right to float through private property.
So even if you're not touching the riverbed, you're just floating by, that's not allowed.
Even if you're not touching the riverbed, you're trespassing if you're floating through private property.
Wow.
And that is, and that's according to the People v. Emmert case. Mm-hmm. It has been further confused, I would say, over the years since that case. There has been, I think, Marky, maybe you have the date better, but mid-80s, we had Colorado Attorney General who had an opinion that it did not, it meant you, floating was actually okay. Like, don't worry about that Supreme Court case. You can't actually float. And I think just to speak to a little bit of, because this is a place American Whitewater has worked a lot, is kind of in some of these individual tension zones with boaters, rafting companies, where there has been very antagonistic landowners, you know, wielding firearms, putting a barbed wire across the river so you can't get by. And I think, so the laws on the books say you're trespassing if you float through private property. I think many listening to this, if you go out on the Roaring Fork, you're very used to seeing the signs, you know, public property, don't park your boat here, don't get out. We have that fishing easement between here and Glenwood where folks, you can stop and wade fish, but that's it, you know. And so there's been a bit of like an uneasy truce that's happened in the wake of the People v. Emmert case. And one of the issues we have seen, and we've worked with our members, affiliate clubs on, is how this kind of lack of direction from the state of Colorado has trickled down to lack of understanding from local law enforcement about what they need to do if they get a call and just how to handle things on the ground. And so a lot of our bigger cause here with this Colorado Stream Access Coalition is to address that, have that assurance for recreators of what, where they are allowed access, understand fully what their rights and privileges are, and also for the landowner, understanding what they can do, who they can call, and really what the law is, because it's been confusing for 50 years.
Well, and as we've seen more wealth move into the state, are we seeing attempts to further restrict access to rivers?
Absolutely. Maybe just a quick point about the Attorney General opinion that Hattie just mentioned. Dwayne Woodard was the Attorney General who wrote this opinion, and all he really says is that there is no criminal trespass if you're floating through private property. Unfortunately, that doesn't mean there's not civil trespass. And while civil trespass might just result in a fine, if you basically continue to trespass, a court could hold you in contempt, which would be a criminal contempt proceeding. So it's not. Caddy's right. There has been a kind of uneasy truce between landowners and the public that might want to use rivers, but it's not uniform. And landowners still, I think, work to restrict public access. I think, Raleigh, I think you were just suggesting that these rich private landowners are restricting public access, keeping people away from fishing in particular on our streams. And so it remains a really serious problem in Colorado. Maybe we can talk a little bit about this sort of distinction between navigable and non-navigable waters, though. Would that be something I think the folks would like to hear? This is really, I think, the core of the problem that we were trying to raise in the Roger Hill case that we litigated for like 5 years in the courts. The basic rule here is that, and this is from the U.S. Supreme Court, if a river is deemed navigable, what we call navigable for title purposes, then the state was granted title to the bed of that river or stream at statehood. And it's not a title like you would hold in land. The Supreme Court, that is the U.S. Supreme Court, has made clear that it's a title held in trust for all the people. And the court specifically said it was so you could carry on commerce, navigation, and have liberty of fishing therein, freed from the obstruction of private parties. And so this concept of navigability, particularly if a river is deemed navigable for title purposes, is quite important. And the state of Colorado has never recognized any river as being navigable for title. The Roger Hill case involved the Arkansas River, which we believe is navigable for title, and we prepared a whole study with an expert who had done his PhD thesis on the Arkansas, and we were convinced that we had the evidence to show that it indeed was navigable for title at the time of statehood. But we never got to present that evidence in court because the court denied Mr. Hill standing before we had a chance to present that evidence.
That's fascinating that Colorado has not declared any rivers navigable, even the Colorado River, I assume.
In fact, the Emmert case involved the Colorado River, which is kind of another interesting tidbit. It's one interesting fact, though, about the Emmert case is that the defendants, they stipulated that the Colorado River was not navigable. Now, why they did this, I don't know. Emmert himself was a lawyer, but he didn't really know much about water law, or at least that's my intuition from how the case was handled. But in any event, you're probably right that there was at least a very good argument that the Colorado River, where this happened, was navigable. It's worth pointing out, by the way, that at the Utah-Colorado border, once you go over into Utah, the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, has held that the river is navigable in Utah, but apparently not, or at least we don't have any law yet to say that it's navigable in Colorado.
So, yeah, you have to go on a Ruby Horse Thief trip. When you start, it's not navigable, but by the time you have ended, it's navigable.
And so, Don, what does the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers organization think about all this?
Well, we've been involved in the stream access issue really since our origins several years ago. And we look at it, we have chapters in all 50 states, and we're really working these issues, not only for stream access, but also any kind of public waters, lakes, oceans, et cetera. And so we have people in the Atlantic and the Pacific who are fighting for access to beaches and oceans. We have folks in more landlocked areas that are really fighting for stream access, but also
to certain public waters that are lakes and ponds, et cetera. So that's something that's really core to our beliefs is the idea that there's a public trust in these resources, that they don't belong to any particular one. I think in the Emirate dissent, there was a particularly very eloquent dissent that talked about the water that's in the stream will also be the snow that's falling and will be, you know, the clouds in the sky and will later be a juicy melon. It was just an actual quote. And you can't pin that down. It's something that somebody owns. And clearly these pathways, these streams and rivers in Colorado take us to magical places. I've kayaked and I've seen things that I never would have seen anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And they're gateways to just our wonderful resources of outdoor recreation here in Colorado. And I think the important point, and the BHA has done a lot of work because we're a national organization, to compare stream access in various states. And, you know, our research shows that Colorado has the worst stream access laws, certainly in the western United States, if not very close to having the worst nationwide. And if you compare states, Colorado portrays itself as being a progressive, outdoor recreation-focused state. On the other hand, for example, New Mexico just very significantly expanded their stream access, something very broadly similar to what you would find in Montana, which provides floating and wading access for people who run whitewater, who float rivers, who wade on stream beds. And pretty much every other state around Colorado in the western part of the United States has something. We just heard about Utah has something that's better. Anytime you're looking at an issue like where do I stand, you know, you always try to do benchmarking. Mm-hmm. Well, what are other people doing? You know, how can we improve? And in Colorado, we're so far behind, it's almost embarrassing. And one of the things I think that struck us at Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is particularly for the issue of navigable rivers, this is a decision that leaders of Colorado should have made at the time of statehood and could have made through every administration. Every executive branch that's occurred since then could have made this decision. And we had a meeting with the staff of the state attorney general's office, and we asked them, has Colorado ever done any kind of research about whether there are streams in Colorado that were susceptible or that were navigable or susceptible to navigation, railroad ties, beaver pelts, that sort of thing at the time of statehood in 1876? And their answer was, no, we don't know of such a study and we've never seen such a study. So they don't, if they're claiming there's no navigable rivers in Colorado, which they have at times stated, there's no actual research or basis upon which they can base that upon.
Yeah. Well, and you spoke about comparisons, and my understanding is that most Latin American countries consider any waterfront property public. Are all the beaches surrounding the lakes, the rivers, is accessible to anybody?
Well, I was thinking of Hawaii as well. It feels mm-hmm. like cultures that are respect and driven by indigenous heritage. Like Hawaii, the entire circumference of any Hawaiian island is open to the public. Isn't that right?
Yes. This goes back, though, to the Roman Empire, Raleigh. I mean, the famous Institutes of Justinian from the 6th century basically make clear that the waters along the shore are public waters, and you're allowed to use them and fish from them, and you can even set up a temporary building or you know, structure on them to facilitate your boating and your fishing rights. So if you look over history and throughout the world, really, not just in Latin America, not just in Hawaii, but all over the world, public access is the norm. There are a few exceptions to that. We were talking on the way over about the fact that England and Wales are pretty narrow in their allowance for public access to streams. Interestingly, though, Scotland has one of the most liberal provisions for public access rights. And so it's a mixed bag, but by and large, it's really been much more popular within states to allow broad public access.
May I ask a question, Raleigh?
Yeah, jump in, Greg.
So what's coming to my mind is that I wonder, and this may be my altruistic, idealistic mind, but this seems like a safety issue. Has safety ever been brought up in these cases? And anywhere from being threatened by violence, having rocks thrown at you to a gun pointed at you. But as a kayaker, I would be absolutely terrified if I came across river-spanning barbed wire. Kayakers generally carry a knife to free themselves. You're not going to free yourself with barbed wire. I don't know about fishermen, but if you got your waders stuck in barbed wire and drown, that seems like a drowning safety issue. But anyway, my curiosity is, one, is that ever used in your cases to try to advocate for more reasonable floating rights? And then, two, I would love to kind of getting towards the tail end, hear more about Bill's story and his role in Common Waters. And he obviously experienced violence directed towards him.
It's a really good question. The stories about barbed wire across rivers and streams is sort of common. I'm not sure that it happens all that frequently, but it certainly does happen. And people have reported to me that they've encountered barbed wire across fast-moving streams and from their kayaks. And obviously, it poses a real safety risk. And the ranchers argue that they need to do it to keep their cattle where they want their cattle. But it's highly problematic, particularly if that stream is subject to public access rules. Because if it's subject to public access rules, then it seems that the rancher has no right to block public access in a way that's highly dangerous to people. Roger Hill, as you were mentioning, he was threatened with arrest, but also the landowner threw baseball-sized rocks at him. Roger is now, I think, 83 years old, and he has a heart condition, and so he was forced to leave the stream, basically, to avoid either arrest or maybe a serious injury because of that. Roger's buddy was shot at by the same landowner, and that landowner actually spent 30 days in jail for what was called criminal menacing. So this is a common problem, I think, that happens with people who are trying to exercise their rights to use our waterways.
Were those guys fishing?
They were fishing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Roger Hill is quite a famous fisherman here in Colorado.
Well, we have about 8-ish minutes, just to give us a time check. I do want to make sure folks know, if they're tuned in and interested to learn more, that there is an event tonight at the Glenwood Vaudeville Review at 5:30. And there will be several films screened relating to rivers, including River of Sorrows by Rig to Flip. And it's fundraising for a new film, right, all about river access?
Yeah, Common Waters. And I want to mention that if people are interested in coming, we'd love to have you. Also, it supports the production of Common Waters. But you do need to go to RoaringForkKayakingClub.com to get tickets.
Okay.
And sooner rather than later, it already may be sold out, but please check it out because I doubt it. And two, you can purchase drawing tickets for numerous great prizes that will also support Rig to Flip's final production of Common Waters, which covers Roger Hill that they were just discussing, and the theme of it is exactly what we're talking about right now. But also it's going to screen Rig to Flip's The River of Sorrows that was released several years ago. It was actually in the Five Point Film Festival several years ago about the pathetic state of in-stream flow on the Dolores River because of historical decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We may want to reiterate that this will be the world premiere of the teaser for Common Waters that will be shown.
Cool.
We haven't even seen it, so we might see it for the first time.
Yeah, and just a couple more things on tonight, and maybe it's like a good shift, too, to kind of talk about, you know, we've been talking about the current state and talk about kind of where our coalition is hoping to go as we move forward. And you know, this is an amazing opportunity to, you know, talk with many of you kind of more about the issue and gain the interest and support, because I think as we've mentioned, you know, Colorado hasn't ever done that research into navigability. There have been many opportunities for leadership in our state to have changed the state of play and made Colorado not the absolute worst in the country. You know, where American Whitewater is also national, and we've done the same review across the states, and it stacks up quite poorly. And so I take that as being very clear. This is not something that we can continue to sit on our heels and expect to have a different outcome. Mm-hmm. I think that there have been, you know, attempts in the past, Mark's case with Roger Hill, attempts with the legislature. You know, it's not the first time people have been trying to make a change here and really run into some quite difficult roadblocks at every instance. And so this is like the perfect example of a case against, you know, a David and Goliath matchup. This is in the interest of the mass majority of Coloradans. Mm-hmm. And something that we really are going to need a large, broad, diverse group of voices to make change on.
That's a great point, Hattie. And this is a wake-up call. This is occurring, you know, this effort is occurring at the same time that public lands are in jeopardy throughout the United States, including Colorado. And I think it's important to, you know, for people to get organized and to, you know, one of the rallying cries backcountry hunters and anglers has been keep public lands in public hands. And that's certainly true, we think, of stream access too, that we need to fight. They're related things to fight for. And if you don't make progress on one, potentially, you know, other things are going to be rolled back as well. And so we have to be alert to all these issues that are coming up and be prepared to organize around them.
Mm-hmm. Can I say one last thing about sort of this issue about navigability and particularly about rivers that are not navigable for tidal? So we talked about the fact that for a navigable for tidal river, the state owns the bed. And we really value that because that means the public has an absolute right to stand on the bed of the river. With respect to non-navigable rivers, the publics still have rights except in Colorado. So for non-navigable rivers in every other Western state, you still have a right to float through private property. And in a few states, we mentioned New Mexico and Montana, you also have the right to stand on the bed, even if the river is not navigable. And so this becomes a really important issue for fishermen in particular. Mm-hmm. But also, of course, we want access for boaters as well to float through private property. And right now, as we were talking about, as Hattie mentioned, the law is pretty much up in the air. The law, if you read the Emmert decision, the court makes it crystal clear that there is no right of the public to float through private property. They say that point blank. And so while there's been this uneasy truce, that's not enough, I think, for most of us. We need mm-hmm. to secure those rights under law.
And so this sounds like an excellent opportunity for anybody interested to speak with like minds and to come up with some actions and some alliances to make some change happen. Once again, the film's at the Vaudeville Review in Glenwood Springs at 5:30. And what was the website again, Greg, to get tickets?
To get tickets, it'd probably be easiest to go to RoaringForkKayakingClub.com, where you can both purchase tickets. It will link you to the Vaudeville, and also purchase drawing entries, also a fundraiser for this Rig to Flips Common Waters film. And then lastly, just the community of it all. Yes, you will hear more from these benevolent experts, Hattie and Mark and Bill, and we will look forward to hopefully seeing you there. But at the very least, pay attention to this, along with Hattie and the rest of us, and advocate for your rights.
Thank you so much, Greg, Hattie, Don, Mark. Appreciate you being here at KD&K.
Thanks, Raleigh.
Yeah. Good luck with the event.
Thanks so much,
Raleigh. This has been Everything Under the Sun. Stay tuned for Regional Roundup coming up in just a few seconds. Thanks.